picture again, but they're all connected to one side, so those people are just waiting for the call. This is our last week of summer camp. It went really well. No problem really with the weather early on, but other than that, things went well. We were able to provide the experience to approximately 100 local children ages 5 to 13. We had about an average of 80 kids a day, which is a lot. We had 13 different programs come in to work with the students, and come to say nature programs, ecology programs, natural arts, science, climbing, canoeing, local history, surface skills, fishing, music, and more. That's on top of the lessons and groups that are recommended to themselves, and on top of the bike co-op that we did, which I'll talk about later. Of the 31 people that helped facilitate these programs, 19 of them are volunteers from local organizations or individuals who volunteered. We had volunteers from the Land Conservancy, Shaker Museum, Cornell Crawford Extension, Claremont, Farmscape Ecology, Beautiful Racket, Middle Circus, Beer Science, Kids News with Rebecca, and like I said, some individuals also volunteered, independent of our organization. Of the 31 programmers that work with us, all 31 are hoping to come back and work with us in some capacity, either in the fall or for sure next summer. We were able to employ 21 representatives, not including some of our regular part-time employees or representatives as well. We have 4 usually supported around the Columbia Bay workforce through Columbia Bay Community College. That's a program that helps younger teens entering the workforce figure out how to manage their responsibilities, how to cash their check, how to build a resume, all of that. So we had 4 of those employees and they were great. We were able to provide multiple trainings for our staff, help create professional development opportunities for them, including one in-depth training on giving and receiving feedback and the importance of that skill in professional and personal relationships. That training was really well received. We were really excited. A lot of them had never learned how to give and receive feedback, and that kind of changed the dynamic of some of our groups, which was really cool to see. On the last day, we're going to do a modified version of the celebration. Typically, we would all get together and celebrate and do a big beach party. We're going to stick with our COVID pod separations, however, and do separate celebrations. We are planning on putting together some little bags, like send them off the rest of the summer for the school year. We're going to have some regulating toys, some snacks, and some back-to-school supplies. So I'm excited about that. Pictures are just some of the programs that we did on the back from our kids, and I threw a picture of Calvin since we had missed him so much. I wanted to make sure we made his debut in our stuff. With this being the last week that we have camp, we're going to extend the beach hours for 2 weeks after camp, and are definitely going to do those a fall soccer program, which I'm pretty excited about. Hoping to have registration forms out by the end of the week, but we want to make sure that we've got the language ready and all the insurance stuff is up to date and all that before we hand them out. We're not doing full lead, but we'll be doing clinics on Saturdays at the Greenport Park. We've already got it all set up there. It's going to be open for children 5 to 13 on Saturdays, September 18th through November 6th. We're going to have 2 to 3 head coaches that are going to run the program. And then the idea is that we get weekly volunteers from parents. And then those coaches are not only going to coach the children, but also coach the parents on how to be coaches so we can build up the program, build the foundation, and hopefully have a lead next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz.
Just a question about the soccer. Will there be like a transportation to Greenport?
I know there's a lot of websites out there that are free to, you can download like coaching manuals for soccer, for fundamentals and drills and things like that.
One of the coaches we're bringing in has 4 years of experience and has built a lot of those manuals on his own. And then Haley Hollenbeck, I'm trying to reach out to her. She's coached previously and has a lot of her own handbooks. And then I was going to be the third one if needed.
During camp, you participate in a free lunch program, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions from the council? Trisha.
Yeah, there is any way can youth department can open even for cricket game?
Say again?
Cricket.
Any questions from the public? Thank you, Liz.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Robin can't be with us tonight, but Michael is going to tell us something about the committee.
Sure. I mean, I can just say that her focus right now has been on hiring for the new department. Of course, the law has not officially passed. It's still in the waiting period before it comes into law, so in the meantime, I'm helping her navigate the hiring process with the union. I've heard that on Thursday, CSEA voted to include her clerk position in the contract with CSEA. So that should move us forward with establishing that position for department. But other than that, nothing to report.
Okay. Fire isn't here. Is that somebody? No. Since Heather is here, let's have Heather next.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to sit. Okay, so the ARPA stuff is starting to happen, so I wanted to give you guys a pretty reasonably in-depth understanding of how this is going to work. Obviously, we're just at our baby steps right now. But we did receive our first tranche of $310,000 and change, so that is sitting in our account. There are some really interesting, I sat through a 2.5-hour seminar on ARPA and all the regulations and restrictions and reporting around it, and there's still outstanding questions. This was with NICOM and a person from OSC combined, so if they don't know the answers, that means the answers aren't quite clear yet. Basically, there's a couple things to understand. One is that this is not going to get recorded as revenue immediately. It gets recorded as a liability. So what that basically means is it has no impact on fund balance whatsoever. And the idea is you record it as a liability and you offset that with cash, and then as you identify the expenditures for which the ARPA money is going to be used, you then modify the budget and take the money out of that. And I will return to that point in a minute once we get to a couple of resolution questions. So basically that's how it's going to work. It all comes into the general fund. It can be transferred out to other funds. I think it's unlikely that as a city we're going to do that because water and sewer are pretty self-maintaining and we pay for cemetery out in general anyway. So I imagine it's going to all stay in. But it will depend ultimately on what we decide to spend the funds on. Just to give you an idea of timing, all the funds have to be obligated by the end of 2024, and they have to be expended by 2026. And basically anything that isn't done in that period of time literally gets returned back to the federal government, or in our case to the state, which then presumably would return it back to the government. A couple other options. I happen, just as an FYI, again, I don't imagine that we will be considering these, but you never know. We can pool funds with other governments. So if there was, say, a project that was, you know, appropriate for both the county and the city to participate in, that's allowable as long as it's for one of the allowable uses. And you can also transfer funds to certain nonprofit or public benefit corporations. So before I get to allowable uses, talk about prohibited uses, and basically the first thing is you can't be used to just up your fund balance. It has to be spent outright, but that's not as bad as it sounds. You can't use it to spend principal or interest on any outstanding debt, you can't use it on legal settlements, you can't use it for grant matches. You can't do it for premium pay for workers if they're not considered doing essential work. Those are the things that we're not allowed to do. But here's where it starts getting a little better. There's basically two different sort of camps that the money can be used in. And the first camp is, I think, where most of our spending will probably come from, and that's called revenue replacement or lost revenue. And that basically is, there's, as there always is with the government, there's a very specific formula that has to be calculated, and that's obviously going to be one of our next steps. Haven't had a chance to do that yet. But in short, we're going to be taking 2019 and then looking at what we lost in 2020 and 21 and compare it against that. And basically anything that we can identify as lost revenue, we can in turn use the ARPA funds to supplement the budget for basic ongoing governmental expenses. So, and we certainly know that we had a pretty significant loss last year. One of the things I have to clarify is that it's not just the general fund, it's an entity-wide reporting, but I believe that means it includes sewer and cemetery, but for some strange reason not water, because water is considered a utility. It's all very strange. I can't remember what happened to the sewer budget in 2020. So that's going to be an interesting thing to see how that impacts our total 2019 versus 2020 income, and we'll determine how much of this we can use in that manner. If there is anything left, then there's basically these three categories, which is responding to public health emergencies or negative economic impacts, response to performers doing essential work, and making necessary investments in water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure. So hopefully by this time next month, I'll have a better sense of what that formula comes out to. But I just wanted to get that in everybody's head, just start thinking about, you know, how we might want to use those funds, if in fact there are going to be funds that are beyond just the lost revenue component. And like I said, there's a specific formula, there's a specific growth rate we can use, growth rate assumptions, and then there's some reporting that has to happen. The first reporting is due October 1st of this year, so it will obviously be determined by then for sure.
What's the total that we are eligible for in the fund?
It's $620,000 in change, and we got the $310,000 at the end of July, and we will get the other $310,000 presumably about the same time in 2022.
Heather, even though you said you couldn't use the, that water was not a, was considered a utility and therefore prohibited, but if there's remaining aid, you can put it in investments in water? That seems contradictory,
yes.
Is it?
Thank you. Welcome to New York.
All right, just kind of
Does anybody have any other questions on the ARPA thing before I go forward?
So when you say allowable expenses for health, I know some municipalities now investing in radio communication. They have their own kind of radio channel that for health emergencies, the city can tune in to the station and they can get emergency information from the city. So is that something that can be looked into for expenditure?
I don't know for sure. I would think potentially yes. I will say in the seminar that I sat through, the presentation itself was about an hour, and the other hour and a half were municipalities of every size asking questions very much like that. Does this count? Does that count? Mm-hmm. And not all the answers were that clear. So, you know, I would certainly reach out probably to NICOM. If we have any things that we are not 100% sure would qualify, I would probably reach out to NICOM for an opinion. OSC will not give opinions at all. They're basically washing their hands of the whole thing except for giving us some basic accounting coping devices.
I'll send you the information so you have a background so you can kind of see, because a lot of it was used for COVID information. That's where it started from. So I'll send you that article. Mm-hmm. See, so
I mean, I think you could probably make an argument that it could be used for something like that.
Are we limited to the 620? What if we collectively find a project that costs around like $1 million or so? Are we able to go and request an additional $400,000?
No, we would have to fund that privately. Okay. Or not privately, but you know, public funds.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
And this is just more of the usual stuff. So still working on the audit. That's just as much for my information as anybody else. We're going to have, I think, we have three resolutions out of these four tonight. The fourth one is still in process. And this is what I said I might come back to this, because in my opinion, the equipment that we're going to buy to do the live streaming is something that I think is specifically related to COVID, because it allows for safe spacing, it allows for participation, and all of those things. So the resolution as it currently is written just takes it, it's a transfer out of hospitalization, but I would recommend if people are up for it that I just swap that out and this becomes our first spending from our thing. So if you're all in agreement with that, I will go ahead and make that change and have it ready for your Tuesday meeting.
Cool.
Sure.
Yeah.
We can still vote.
I'm sorry. Can you just repeat?
One at a time. We can talk about it when we get to the resolution. We're just changing where the funds come from.
Oh, the live streaming. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I have to come back to the ARPA.
Okay.
So it says that it is revenue replacement. Is that not just is what you're saying that that will be the bulk of what the fund goes to? Is to just goes into a general fund as lost.
I believe it will be the bulk of it, yes.
Yes.
I have to run the numbers obviously first, but I mean, you know, we were down at $500,000.
So then we'll just leave the remaining like 150,000
don't know how this year's going to pan out yet. But yeah.
Yeah, that's also the easiest to track as well.
Yeah.
It's a little less traveling.
Right, so even though it doesn't, it can't be added directly to fund balance, it indirectly will help fund balance stay at a higher rate by using those monies to help offset ongoing governmental operation expenses, based on however much the lost revenue comes out of it.
So when you mean lost revenue, like the parking, that's lost revenue because...
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, they're not even looking at it that granularly, it's literally like... Take 2019, since we're in a fiscal year, take 2019, and you can either look at what you anticipated, or you can use a number that they're giving, which is 4.1% of your growth, see where you would have been, see where you came in, that's lost revenue.
Right.
Yeah. Just a couple others. Fee accounting, there was a pretty significant change, as there is every few years, in a GASB regulation. So the fee accounting charge was a little higher than we had budgeted, so you see a budget from there. LOSAP, which is the Firefighter Service Award Program, that came in a little higher than what we had budgeted for that. And then the last one is the one that isn't here yet, but it's basically allowing the city to enter into one universal IT service plan that will have, you know, so every department will have the same things, will have the same backup, they'll have the same, you know, stuff being stored on the server, which is not the case at all right now, and that is still causing some problems. And obviously, the second thing is that just with what's been going on with cybersecurity, you know, we have some, you know, systems and departments that are more vulnerable than others, depending on what we individually decided to put in. So, you know, I think I can speak for both Tom and Kamal, and that we all felt that this was long past due and an expense we have to incur. So, let's see.
And I'm just going to say, it's not a huge expenditure over what we already pay. That was the other thing.
Right. And part of the reason I don't have the resolution for tonight is I can't quite wrap my head around how I'm supposed to figure out how much money we transfer through this year, because I don't really know what individual departments have specifically for the IT purposes. So I did the resolution for, just assuming it's all new, for the last 5 months of the year, and that ended up being about $10,000. And so I may see if I can try and tweak that, but it may just be the case that we have to just put it in, and then we figure it out for the 2022 budget process how to better allocate those funds. Okay, so the city clerk and I did meet to talk about an accrual policy. It became pretty clear that it was above our collective pay grades, and we needed somebody with some expertise, so I spoke with the mayor, and we agreed that I would reach out to our labor attorney and basically ask them for a quote to provide what I call, you know, best practices and considerations. So not necessarily to write the whole thing, but to basically say, you know, here, and I've already partially had this conversation with her, you know, but here are the elements you need to consider, here are some of the factions and the functions and all of that. So I will be doing that this month. Compliance. Thought we were going to get the notices out. We didn't get them out. We sent them to lodging revs. It turns out lodging revs does not, in fact, mail notices out. So basically, they took the legal language that Jeff Baker wrote that we sent them and the list that we sent them, and they did a mail merge and sent us a PDF back for us to send out. So rather than doing that, we reached back out to our original vendor, who was actually going to, and we also knew that there were some items on the list that were, you know, old. So we put the list back to Azabar, who's actually doing a cross-check and a vetting, because Azabar actually checks against other records. They check against tax rolls, and if they have like water bills and things like that. And we got an update from them, and they anticipate having the notices out by the end of this week. So by the next meeting, we should have an update on that.
Is it proper to have an outside vendor mail?
It'll go on our letterhead. No, it's all on our letterhead. They're just literally cleaning the list and then sending out the mail.
Yeah, I guess we did hire Lodging Res after a lengthy process, and I guess I'm concerned that, it seems as though there may not be, how can I say this? You may not be taking full advantage of the services that they provide.
And I mean, we looked through their list. We got their list from them.
Right, but
we asked them to provide a notice. They created the notice. They informed us that they were not actually going to be responsible for sending the notice.
Which we knew. That was absolutely clear when we hired them.
Okay, I was not aware of that.
Well, the process went on for a while, and there was time for everyone to learn everything. And so, if you didn't know that, I'm sorry. But, it seems, the way we talked about the fact that we have a compliance company that we hired to do compliance specifically, we have a previous vendor who just started doing compliance but did not do compliance at the time that we did our process. The way we left it is that we would use Lodging Res for compliance and determine whether they did the job. And so that's what I think should be happening. And
what is it that you think that Lodging Res should be doing that they haven't been doing? Because they provided us with their list.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite incomplete compared to our other vendor. We gave them the legal notices. They provided the letters back to us. From my understanding, that is pretty much what you anticipated their contribution to be. And
well,
that's
the ongoing contribution actually is the dashboard that they have, which
right.
does daily vetting of short-term rentals. And once the legislation goes into effect in December, that will become very active.
Absolutely agree. Yeah, I think once the legislation goes into place, it will be much more active. And we do have the access to the dashboard. My team has been trained on it, and we've been looking at it. I think I said in the last meeting there were only two additional properties found in the last month. So we are looking at it. There's just not a lot of activity there yet.
I mean, it seems important to, I'll just say again, take full advantage of what they can do. So that's all.
Okay. Anything else on that?
I guess just to say, it does seem like, well, I guess I have a question. It's just a question. How, so you haven't sent the letters out, which I would have thought would happen, a couple months ago, possibly. When those letters have gone out and there are still non-registered operating short-term rentals, what is your plan for enforcing the fines? Because I believe there's fines in city code, right?
There are, but I think basically it almost immediately becomes a legal issue. I mean, code can't, even though there's a section in the code doesn't have the authority to enter a property, search warrant.
I mean, I think the way it's supposed to work, and this is where Lodging Res does function, is repeated warnings are supposed to go out, not just like one letter.
Right.
But so enforcement is a process of intimidation,
essentially. Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump immediately to the thing. Yes, we would absolutely do that. And then I think the question would be, how many times do we issue something like that? And if we still think they're out there and they're not compliant, at what point then do we pull that trigger?
Yeah.
And then that trigger is threatening legal action, basically. And, the law side of it, not the code side of it, but the law side of it gives a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? It has, we can request their financial records. We can, we can subpoena them for their financial records and all things like that. So, obviously the hope is that one or two warning letters, can probably be a lot like the foreclosure ones. First one's, sort of just professional. The second one gets a little harder, and the third one's like basically a lawyer's going to be in touch with you soon if you don't make this happen. So that's how I would anticipate it happening.
Okay.
kind of warning letters, you're going to state to them exactly the process so they know ahead of time as it gets to that junction. In terms of, you know, if you don't comply, this is going to happen. We could subpoena your records. We could subpoena this. Is that going to be part of the warning?
It can be.
Because I think the more they know and they don't comply, they can't. But the other is to say, we didn't know. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what our consequences are for our actions.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I would think the notices would maybe go out monthly.
Leading up to the start of the law.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. More than enough warning time. I mean, your credit card sends you one, and then they get a little raising rates.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Operation start in January, or
no? We're employing them currently.
So are there overlapping systems? I'm not clear.
Well, I mean, the way it's a little confusing, but not too bad. What happened is that we began a procurement process for a compliance company. We did the whole process. We interviewed three companies.
Yes.
Asabar was not one of them because, I mean, Heather never at that time brought Asabar forward as a possible.
Actually, I believe you did speak to Asabar because they've had a conversation with you in any case.
Well, I've called them about stuff, but they were definitely not one of the three companies
okay.
that we interviewed. So we had three companies. I was basically charged with selecting the final one. I selected Lodging Reps. And sometime later, Asabar communicated to Heather that they had begun to do this thing. I had a lengthy conversation with Asabar before they started doing this thing, in which they told me exactly what they didn't do, which is the thing exactly that Lodging Reps does, which is have a dedicated like scrubbing system for all of the sites. Maybe they now have purchased a proprietary, I don't know what they did with Asabar, but apparently they developed their own way of doing it. And so that happened in the interim between when we hired Asabar and created the contract and started.
When you hired Lodging Reps?
Lodging Reps.
Okay, so there has been a point where both.
Well, so we already had, there was some deliberations about whether we should cancel the contract with Asabar and use, because we use Asabar, we use Asabar for our tax collection.
Registration
and tax collection. So we already had them set up
okay.
for that. But
okay.
Lodging Reps does that too. So there was some talk about, well, why don't we use Lodging Reps for all of it? But Heather's office did not want to stop using Asabar for the
tax collection.
And so we agreed that we would use the two of the companies and basically see how Lodging Reps did on the compliance piece and then potentially switch over to Lodging Reps for the whole thing because they do all that.
I would just add,
when you say the whole thing, you mean the processes
mm-hmm.
that the treasurer knows and finds valuable and we're ingrained with it. So
yep, which
I
are
mean,
you know, they're not like unusual processes, so it's yeah,
right.
Like
but it is if I would be going with the treasurer's recommendation.
Well
but
I mean
go ahead. I'd just like to note two other things. In addition to the fact that we already had a contract in place, Asabar is considerably less expensive to the tune of about a third the cost of the other vendor in terms of doing tax collection, so that did not seem like a smart move. And the second thing I would just note that until literally maybe a month before LocalGov was brought in, the entire conversation was that this was a code enforcement issue and that software was going to be living with code enforcement.
No.
Yeah,
no.
It was.
No. It was determined really early on that was not
true. No. It's not true, Heather.
No. Okay. Well, in any case.
That you're referring to an early draft of the law, and that was, well, it's not worth rehashing, but
right.
Let's move this along in any case.
Data from both, as both can do similar?
Yeah, we have. We've gotten the data from both vendors and actually actually compared them and then combined them together so we have the most robust list as possible.
But okay.
But moving forward in terms of after these contracts or whatever went over, to say, okay, this is a cheaper but can do the exact same thing, are we going to be down that road eventually? That we don't need both companies doing kind of stuff?
But, you know, I think Rebecca's point is well taken in that we'll see what happens when the sunset period is over, because that could really just make things skyrocket. And in that case, you know, I think that lodging us would be a valuable tool.
Gotcha.
So we'll see.
Okay, and with that, can we go along here?
I'll go quickly. So got some pretty decent news in terms of some of our revenues. Some of them seem to be coming back, which is nice. So we're at basically now more or less on track with our budget numbers for various parking revenues. We saw a nice bump in Front Street Municipal Lot. I'm not entirely sure how or why yet, but I'll take a look into that. And year to date, we're about the same, at about 57%. But remember that a year ago is underinflated because that was COVID, and so a lot of the 2020 numbers are lower than what they were in 2019. And building permits and fees, again, we're continuing to see good growth on this. We've basically already hit our budget on plumbing permits, and we're at almost 85% of building permits. And I added sales, mortgage, and lodging tax revenues. Sales tax, we got a very healthy sales tax check last week about, I'm sorry, I did not update those columns. I copied and pasted it from a prior year, so please ignore the 2021 actual years to date. But we got our first sales tax check, and it was for about $585,000, which I think is probably the highest sales tax figure that the city's seen. So that's very good news. And mortgage tax, again, this is one that fluctuates wildly from year to year, but mortgage tax, the first payment came in at more than what we had for the budget. So $159,000, so that's also great. And obviously the one that's dragging right now is lodging tax, but that does tend to be heavier in the third and fourth quarters. So we can look to see that picking up. And that's it.
Thank you, Heather. Any questions from the council? Go ahead, Jane.
I do. On your operational, your second point, city needs guidance in development. I'm sorry, I missed what that meant. What is development? The Green Mayor's office, the city needs guidance in development.
On the OSC, the accrual policy.
Yeah, it's a follow up to the bottom, the first bullet point. So basically, when OSC came in and they did an audit, one of the things that they noticed was that although the city has for 30 or more years been giving people accrual time and tracking it and letting them use it and letting them earn it, there's literally no written policy in place. There's a policy in place that says here's how you track it and here's how you have to fill in your form and give it to the clerk, but there's nothing that says how does it get earned, are there caps, does it get paid out at the end, who's eligible for it, and all of that stuff. So basically creating that policy around accruals.
I just would like to comment that it seems like that would be part of a larger HR overview.
Yep.
But not in this pertinent discussion, just an observation.
Yep. Absolutely.
Thank you, Jane. Any questions from the public? So thank you, Heather. Who is next? I think the police are next, and I think we have a guest to do the police report. This is Shane Bauer. If you don't know him, he is the police commissioner.
How are you?
And I believe Ed Moore is on vacation.
He is. First vacation in a long time.
So Shane, don't be nervous.
Not nervous at all.
Well, I'm trying to make you nervous, but
All right. So first thing first is mandatory reporting. mandating reporting for the month of July. I left a copy in everybody's mailbox, hopefully you got it. So in month of July, use of force incidents were zero. Number of arrests were 26 to 32 total charges, meaning 26 arrests, but some of the arrests had more than one charge. Number of emotionally disturbed persons, there was 9. Number of calls involving a drug overdose or suspected drug overdose were 4.
None.
And we did not administer Narcan, and we did not report any overdose deaths. Any questions about that? Okay.
Nope.
A couple other things that we have going on through civil service. We jumped on board with the county in regards to getting ourselves on an emergency test because we have nothing to pull from to fill spots. So we've been hitting the internet pretty hard trying to get it out to all the communities and everybody we can that the test is out there. Come take the test. Unfortunately, because of the small amount of time that we had to plan, my idea was for the department was to get out and actually get to some events and actually set some guys, and we were going to assign a couple of people to get out into the community and to do it. It has not been that easy. We ended up only with about a week and a half time to do so. So we have something that's going out every single day on the internet, an ad, as well as the paperwork and the links and where to find them. And that push is, they have to be signed up by August 17th, so a very short window, and the test is on September 8th. We also put up a link on the website saying that if there's any questions in regard to the test, anything we could help somebody with, to call the station, maybe somebody would talk to them in regards to helping them. And the last thing is we're in the process of working on setting up police training. Arrest situations affect on family with Joan Hunt in Huntson Promise neighborhood. One of the suggestions that was from the park committee. We, behind the scenes, the chief and I sat down with Joan for a bit, gave her a lot of the information he needed for the grant that we applied for. So hopefully we'll get good news on that. So that's all I had. Ready to sign.
Thank you.
Anything?
Questions from the council?
Well, I think maybe this is the time to pass these out.
There you go.
For the Derby, which is the police department is going to host a Derby for the kids.
The Biden Park.
It's they can register at the. You want to come?
Sure. Should I speak better?
So there you go.
Anyway. It's the barbecue and Pinewood Derby event. I know last year there was one that was set up, and because of COVID, everything was missed. The kids can stop down and sign up at the police department. They can register. And there's also a derby kit for them provided to them. I'm going to leave some of these on the table if you guys, anybody wants any.
I got enough for all the councils to hand out their award. There's enough there for all the council. There's a kit. There's
no age on here, is there? That's scary. No, you cannot, Dominic. No, you cannot. So that's one of the things that we're doing as well.
And the reason why I brought it to the attention, because when I was younger, I did the same thing. It was awesome, but we had actually the big ones, not the little ones, but I was little. You made the big, the bigger one. Thanks. So it was very memorable. So I think it's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. No, those are actually the ones that are gravity based.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Okay. So you want to take enough out to make them pass too fast to the next row of each.
So in the back row.
Anybody else?
Any other questions?
Oh, I did have a question. So I noticed on there's some kind of recruitment period happening for
didn't he just mention that? I think that's what he just was talking about, Rebecca. That was all recruitment.
I'm sorry.
Okay. I'll say again. that we're kind of limited to Facebook at this point because we got on the band a little too late. So we only had about a week and a half to 2 week period. So we've been bombarding social media to get the information out, to let people know the test is available, to let them know they can pick up the applications at our department. They can also call the police department to find out any information they need to make themselves comfortable to take the test.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's available. It's just people take the opportunity to do so.
So you had the one photo I saw on Facebook posting is the forest from like 120 years ago. These guys all, I'm sure all guys, in like long
wool
coats that really look like that. So, you want to join that. The
picture before that, or the picture after that, was all four of our young ladies standing in front of the police car.
I've been telling you, I've been doing great historic photos.
We're equal opportunity.
Take a big hole.
Thank you, Shane. Any questions from the public before you leave? Looks like none. Thank you, Shane. Thank you, Heather. And finally, Mr. Perry, would you like to join us? We're sharing on these because there's only five copies.
Online. We're experiencing some secondary communication issues because we use the same system that we installed as part of the platform 10 years ago, and the water department uses it, and the new pump stations are using it, and it seems to cross traffic between old and new. But while the GC, this is within their contract, so we're holding the retainage while we muster this out, so that's why you hold retainage, so that way you make sure everything is complete before they get all the money. Water department, we have a PRV, pressure reducing valve. We identified some issues that were that probably been in existence since the water plant came online 15 years ago. But there's as the filters cycle up and down, we seem to have this hammer that we didn't realize was going on the raw water transmission main. So we've had some smaller PRV on. This one was built, we assembled it. We'll be installing it later this week, and then it has to be calibrated. But the whole idea is, as flow gets decreased, it'll diminish, it'll open a relief valve, and the pressure will drop down a little bit, so that way we're not putting any kind of back pressure, or as little back pressure as possible, on the very old transmission main. Obviously, July was a very wet month, so I just have a little picture of there's three weather systems, 1, 2, 3. You'll see in the wintertime, once systems start setting up, they're one after another. But the consequence of the wintertime is obviously snow, and the summertime, it's sinkholes. So most of you realize that Columbia Street was closed in various portions over the last couple weeks. There were three identified on the 400 block. We did address two of the most significant ones, and we did them in tandem. So if you look at picture four, they're actually putting flowable fill in the forward hole while the backhoe is down digging the next one. So that way we tried to, because it takes a number of days to go through the process. So that way we could get both of them done in 1 week.
Ron, is this the connection line that came all the way up from the old Molinos all the way up to the top of Fairview?
This is just a stone sewer from the 1800s. Okay. It's basically the trunk line. It grabs from a couple parts of the city. There's one that comes down behind here, Prison Alley, goes over 5th, drops down. So it's probably 3 feet tall and maybe 4 or 5 feet wide. But as you can see in picture 5, when we say laid up stone sewers, it is, it's not just an expression. They literally are stones that are laid up on top of each other. They were just done by hand. And they were actually put in place with clay. So between storm flows that push through, and our rats and things like that that dig through, They make these little holes, and then as the storms come one after another, liquefies, removes dirt, creates these sinkholes. So in 5, we've exposed it. We repaired a sewer section that was going into it. It's hard to tell in this picture, but we actually patched the holes with clay to make sure there's no voids. And then 6 is flowable fill. It is a liquid concrete. It doesn't have the same aggregate as like a sidewalk concrete. It's made with sand as the aggregate, so it is diggable. If we need to go back into it, we can open it, but it makes a pretty tight seal. So that's the solution for the laid up stone sewer. So what happens is, you know, you're talking about, this is kind of like the steps involved. So you've got 7. We have to excavate, find the holes, identify them, patch everything up. The pipe that's going across it is an abandoned gas tank, so we have to work around all the utilities. It is abandoned, but typically, if it comes to gas tanks, it leaves. So there's that. The second phase is to seal off, which is picture 8. So you've got about 8 yards of flowable fill on either side. Then what's not shown is you have to bring stone in the next day, bring everything up because concrete is expensive, stone is significantly less expensive. Put about 30 or 40 ton of stone compacted as it goes up. Then picture 9 shows this is the sub base, it's another 10 inch of concrete, but this concrete is going to be your harder rate of 3 or 4,000 psi. And then the blacktop goes on top. So, you know, all in all, it takes a good 4 to 5 days to handle the process, and it's just because each of the concrete courses, you know, may have to cure a little bit. Otherwise, if they're green, then they're just going to turn brittle and they'll fall apart. You know, so you're talking about, you know, probably $4,000 to $5,000 worth of materials to fix each one of these sinkholes. Catch basins, you know, just more seasonal work. So just 111 is a catch basin, I think, up on top of Colony by Fairview.
That's the one that had the partition, the park partition that came out a little bit. And the only reason I say that is because I watched about 3 cars hit that thing and went and set it up.
Oh, there's, well, while we were there, there's actually the new owner of the...
that corner, right in the corner there.
Yeah, no, the new owner of the American Legion is putting a theater and some other stuff in there, and they require a 4-inch or a 6-inch water service. And the water main that's in Fairview Avenue Extension, that block is 4-inch. So, you know, what they did is they cut in a T with a 6-inch off of the 6-inch that's up there, and they ran the 6-inch down. We supplied a hydrant and some fittings, and what's going to happen is once we get the bacteriological pressure test, which has already passed, the city will assume ownership and responsibility going forward. But you figure it costs us about $200 a foot to install a water main on a contract with prevailing wage. So this is something it does happen throughout, where a private contractor builds something to the city's municipality's specifications and then turns it over afterwards. So that's the case here. That was our specifications, and they complied with it. Just a catch basin. This was just a little more patchwork. This was at Columbia Street. It was just between the two seams that were from the paver. Year after year, you know, water gets in between it. So you have a little milling head that goes on in front of that yellow piece of equipment there, a skid steer. You mill it out, come back, put a little blacktop in there. It is new. Just some Promenade Hill kind of information. This is, the only reason I'm really going into this is because the DPW does have a portion of in-kind services, so it's not, you know, it's not really a DRI update necessarily. But for the as part of our in-kind, the remaining in-kind was to put the conduit in for the bases. So Colors was put in by half the bases. We've run the conduit to get the that'll be for the power lines to go through the new lights, and just something that was kind of curious. On picture 16, you see some orange marks. That's actually rock. And I was wondering if they hadn't hit it before. So the footings will now be less deep because they're not going to blast through rock to try and pour concrete when the rock is stronger than the concrete. So that was just kind of interesting. One of the other things is, this is next picture 17, is This is what was excavated along the backside of the Washington Hills Fire Company to accommodate the new ramp from the parking lot to go into the new park. And, you know, so the blue circles there that look like tree roots are actually abandoned lead service lines. And that's because there was houses that were all there before the park was put in by urban renewal. But the upper level's been there forever, the higher promenade, but the rest of it, there was houses. So there's a bunch of lead services before the running away. But we also, you know, it was a little dangerous there because we noticed that the foundation for the Washington Post is actually just on laid up stone, like the sewers. And when they started compacting and tamping, the rocks actually started to shift and move. So they stopped that, at which point they loaded up with flowable fill, which seems to be a common word today. It'd be a good drinking game, I guess. When I talk about it being diggable, if you look at 18, you know, it is a concrete product, but the machine can literally go through it. They did excavate out, and then picture 19 shows the footings for the new ramp. Waste collection. So Hudson Hall has a day camp going on, and there's a 5 or 6 students at the day camp that are interested in garbage and recycling, and I thought that in itself was pretty amazing, so I had to see it for myself. And it turns out they were interested in garbage recycling after all. I was a little surprising. Anyway, so one of the things that I prepared for them, and this is kind of one of those things that comes up every once in a while, I call it the folly of free garbage. First of all, there's no such thing as free anything. And if you think there is, then we're going to do a little education. So one of the things they say, well, why do I have to buy the blue bags? Well, you don't have to buy the blue bags. You can contract with, you know, anyone in the county waste. They'll put a 55-gallon thing out there. They'll charge you $35 a month, and you can fill it up to your, you know, to your heart's content. You know, what we do is we offer it's a low-volume option. I mean, my family uses a 15-gallon bag, $1.50 a week, $75 a year. Obviously, out of the about $300,000 budget, you know, typically garbage bag sales are about $20,000 or $90,000. So, you know, there is about essentially a little over maybe 60% that's part of the general fund, but the other part of it has a direct revenue source. So they said, well, why don't we just pick up everybody's garbage? Well, first of all, picture 20 shows you one of these county waste things with probably about 100 gallons of garbage in it. So if it's free, guess what? All those little municipal bins, those county waste bins, they all disappear. So do all the little dumpsters, so do all that stuff. Because if it's free, why should I pay something else to take it away? You know, one of the other things is, you know, Hudson used to have free garbage. And there's not too many people here who remember that. But, you know, it used to be 2 full-time crews, 5 days a week, went around and picked up garbage, and that's all they did, because everybody in the city would put out their 2 or 3 30-gallon cans, and, you know, instead of doing, like, we do half the city on one day and half the city on the next day, you know, they were literally doing, like, 3 or 4 blocks, you know, on this day and different sections here, and this is with 2 trucks and 2 crews all the time. So, you know, there was a significant the personnel was twice what we have. You know, obviously equipment, you know, there's issues. So anyway, I did a quick spreadsheet, ran some numbers, and basically if the city was to say we don't want to charge any blue bags anymore, then of course everybody else is going to say yip, yip, hooray, hip, hip, hooray. And the 0.1 account, which is the labor, which is $150,000, is going to double to $300,000 because you're going to need 3 new people. The sale of garbage bags, which is what we pay the ladies to fold the baggage, that goes away. So $20,000 worth of savings because you don't need to fold bags. We also need to purchase bags anymore, so $10,000 goes away. So there's a $30,000 savings. One truck is 6 years old, the other truck is 20 years old, so there'd be another truck involved, a new one, that's $175,000, one-time capital purchase. Obviously, 2 trucks running 5 days a week, more materials and supplies, aka fuel, you know, more maintenance, more tires. So, you know, your first year, you know, you're easily looking at, like, okay, $380,000, $350,000 increase, which is right now is a $300,000 line item for the business model. And you see similar increases going forward. But it's not just the $300,000 increase, it's also that garbage machine that every bag machine that everybody loves, there's $3,000 a week in sales. That's $150,000 in revenue. Yes.
Wouldn't it be smart for the city to like mandate that everybody who lives in the city uses the blue bags instead of having their?
Well, I'm not mandating business. I mean, honestly, if you're a big family and you generate a lot of garbage, then, you know. But
it would still be a cost savings for people.
Yeah, well, we're still, if right now we're handling about 6 tons a week, if we go up to 10 tons a week, we need to add more people.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not magic, you know, gypsies that pick this up and drop it into the back of the trucks. So, you know, right now we're at a level where, you know, we get $150,000 in revenue. It's three guys, you know, we're probably at a break even. If we did see a growth in the post-COVID era, certainly recycling, you know, doubled because where's everybody shopping?
Mm-hmm.
In their living room? And how's the materials making their way to their house? In cardboard boxes? And so, I mean, you know, we have the, you know, the reality is that we don't have anywhere near the equipment and the manpower to handle it. Everybody was mandated to do it, which is exactly what I'm trying to describe. You're talking about a $400,000 increase in year one, just in equipment and manpower. And your tipping fees are also going to increase because I just calculated roughly a 50% increase because the county charges us for what we pick up and we dump. They charge us $102 a ton. So you can figure that would go up by at least $50,000. So, I mean, if, you know, we've had a discussion before about getting out of the garbage business entirely and just having people, you know, outsource it, which you can eliminate most of these costs. Of course, right now I spend $75 on bags a year. You know, if I have to get a Barbado at $35 a month, you know, now I'm up to, what's that, $700 a year. So, you know, my out-of-pocket is significantly higher than what I'm paying now. You know, right now we look at, it's best to see who uses what. You know, high volume people use high volume things. You know, lower volume can use the bags. It's easy. I mean, some people put 2 or 3 bags out a week, and you know, some people just go out and pay. So that was just kind of an idea, just to show that you know that free pickup would be the furthest thing from being free. It would certainly have a significant cost associated with it. Shared services. You know, Greenport's been very good to us this past year. They sent in couple trucks during the snow removal to help us move our snow, and they also send in a crew to help us put these blocks down, as well as transport them. So with the rains, they had a culvert that washed out on one of their back roads somewhere in the Middle East, Jesus, and they didn't have equipment really big enough to do the job. We did. So we sent our machine over there, gave them a quick tutorial, and they made short work with on that culvert part. Ferry Street Bridge. So we did receive our comments, and I've kind of copied and pasted them on here for everybody to look at. But a lot of this stuff is, you know, is really ministerial. It's, you know, section 200.35 doesn't have a comma. You know, just it's just classic DOT stuff. And we not only have to deal with the same stuff with DOT, but two railroads. But you know, one of the things of, you know, kind of, I don't want to say it's significant. But NEPA, which is the federal version of environmental review, like we have SEACER for the state, NEPA is the federal, we have to redo that because it's expired. And we have to redo the bat survey because bats live under bridges and make sure that it's not going to impact any bat habitat. And there's a number of other things that we just have to do over again simply because they're ministerial and they've expired and because, you know, you deal with two railroads and DOT. So, but you know, we are still moving forward.
Okay. Any questions from the council? Any questions from the public? Thank you, Rob.
Hey, I'm sorry, Tom.
What's that?
I
can't hear what
you're
saying.
Oh,
okay. Okay. One announcement I want to make before we get to the resolutions is that given the way things have worked out with our ad hoc committees, I think the one committee we most certainly need to revive is our legal committee.
Yes.
So I would appreciate hearing from anyone who would like to serve on that committee. Please send me an email. Moving along to resolutions. Okay. The first resolution is just our support for the Clean Slate Act, which you know is being considered in Albany. I believe it's been passed by both houses. It's, and it's just waiting to be signed. Yes?
So then anything you do with this resolution is either to support it...
It's just a supportive resolution.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Can I have an introduction, please? Ryan. And Dewan, a second. Thank you, gentlemen. The next resolution, which Jeff will explain to us if we need it, it's just authorizing settlement of a of the city with a assurance company.
Are we allowed to ask? I just had a question on what was involved because I saw the name of the original defendant, I guess.
Yeah.
In there too.
Right. Well, the original plaintiff.
Plaintiff.
Yeah. As I understand it, is there was a claim, I think the lawsuit was started in either 18 or 19, an employee of a company that was putting in a sewer or water line on Prison Alley was injured in the course of the construction. I think the walls fell down on him. He sued a variety of people, including the city. The city's insurance stood up for the defense. But then in the course of the litigation and discovery, turns out that the contractor was actually working for the hotel that was adjacent to Prison Alley. I'm not sure which one it was. So there was an action for our insurance company to go after their insurance company to cover our defense costs. That was the nature, that's the action that we're being asked to settle, is that we was brought, it's called a declaratory judgment action, to declare that the hotel's insured or the contractor's insured was obligated to cover us. Long story short, the insurance company for the contractor settled the case with the plaintiff, which included whatever payments in the settlement were made on behalf of the city's any alleged liability, and got the city out of it and for paying that. And so the settlement basically is that, and that case is now all settled, the city is dropping its lawsuit against the other insurance company for the coverage because they covered our costs. We'll be eating whatever our own costs are. I'm not sure what those are or how much an insurance company will do. I think the insurance company is recommended settling it. Apparently, really nobody's enough to at this point. Is that clear?
Can I have an introduction? Jane, and I'll take Rebecca as a second. The next, as I think I mentioned earlier, we actually need a resolution to change the rules of order so that we can start convening at 6 p.m. Eileen, would you like to introduce?
I would.
Well, I think, okay, we'll give it to Jane. The next resolution, oh, this is the one that Heather was talking about. We're getting equipment to make the live streaming possible. Turns out that an idea that actually Dominic had sent to me quite a while ago has been used by Germantown. It's called an OWL, and this is, what's that?
My agency uses it too. We bought it with Cold
Bunny. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
My agency uses it.
Oh, your agency, I couldn't understand that word.
Yeah.
This is to purchase that, and we're going to change it from coming from the hospitalization budget to the, what's that called again?
No, something. Yeah.
No, we're changing. You're changing it to the
ARPA.
The ARPA. Thank you, ARPA.
Yeah, the ARPA. Right.
Tom.
Yes.
I have a question. Is this going to be interactive, or is this merely live stream?
It's Dominic. Does it have interactive abilities?
Well, it has interactive in terms of what happens is the owl sits in whatever.
Right.
Whoever talks is then projected onto the screen. So how we do it is we have a TV screen also. So if someone is on Zoom, we also can see whatever on Zoom. Like, for example, in our Hudson office, we're on Zoom. The Troy office sees us on the big screen TV that's hooked up to the computer. And so when we talk, we're on the screen. So it could do the same thing in terms of interactive. If someone's on Zoom that wants to interact with council, that is not you.
So it just assesses, basically the API in the back end brings all the disparate systems together to work with one function.
The OWL, if I might, the OWL functions as a combined camera, microphone, and speaker. What is included in the quote that we have is additionally a purpose for a projector so that we can also have visibility of those participating on Zoom.
Okay, so then just as in the Zoom days, the chair would recognize anyone who was off premise.
Correct.
And we would see him on
At his or her discretion, of course. I said at his or her discretion, of course. Exactly. Okay. Did I have an introduction and a second, please? Dewan. Second? Shersha. Okay. This is to cover the Volunteer Fire Service Award Program. We do this every year. It's a contribution to their to a very small retirement money. Any questions?
Simple. What is the line item for hospitalization separately? Heather was mentioning that earlier tonight as well.
I'm sorry. What do you mean? What?
Just that's the line item. Like, what's the classification for hospitalization in our budgetary lines?
You can see the number.
I don't understand the question.
Yeah.
Oh, other than the hospitalization?
Yeah. I've heard it used for a few different things. And we're
no, that's just the same. She just happened to go for that line. That was
okay.
That was just a line where she could find money.
Okay.
It was not.
Thank you. That's all I just wanted
okay.
to
know.
That's from the band, right?
Yeah. So, do I have an introduction? Ryan. And a second, please. Eileen. This is our fee accountant who helps prepare the annual update document. Again, we're relying on the hospitalization.
That's right.
Yeah. Can I have an introduction, please? Shusha, in a second. Go on. And last, we have an introduction, contribution from Marianne Harris to the Senior Center of $50. Can I have an introduction? Go on, and Ryan. Okay. And don't forget, if you introduce or second a resolution, please stop by to sign at the end of the meeting. Okay, we have a lot of laws. We still have the law on our desk, and we'll be able to vote on it next week concerning the registration of vehicles. Now we have four new laws. This first one was, I believe, noticed by Tracy.
Yeah, because we're ordering new stickers for the parking.
Right. And there was apparently something that hadn't been enforced at all. That had parking meters from 5 to 9 on Thursdays.
You know what the holdover is from that, right?
I'm sorry, what?
You know why that was on the books as a holdover?
K-Day
know.
Was Thursday.
Because what?
K-Day was Thursday.
Okay.
The events were open late to be able to go, and we did awesome.
Okay.
Thursday was a shopping day.
Right.
Okay.
It's a very antiquated one,
but yes. Okay. Well, thanks for the history on that. No, I mean it. What's that?
Get rid of the blue laws.
Yeah. So we're just getting rid of that. So can unless there's further discussion, can I have an introduction? Ryan? And a second, please. DeJuan. Okay. This next one speaks to something that's been asked for quite a while. You may be familiar with Basil Nooks' property on Third and the Alley.
Yep.
It was a restaurant. It lapsed. It's in a district that no longer allows restaurants. But it was no longer grandfathered in because the time had elapsed. So what this does is amend the zoning to allow eating and drinking establishments in the R4 zoning district.
Is that the only one, Tom?
What do you mean the only one?
The only one, the only R4 that we have? Is it just there?
No, pretty much.
The R4, yeah. The R4 is primarily south of 3rd.
Yep.
But there's also some GC.
Okay.
There's a small R4, I don't know where it is, sort of near Oakdale Park.
Yeah, it's behind.
By the old luncheonette.
Open
park.
Part of
Washington.
No, part of Washington. Yeah, it's off Harry Howard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be ice cream.
Oh, that's
it's sort of a large parcel, and it seems like.
Yeah, that looks like.
But I don't know what it is.
It's Crosswinds.
Is that Crosswinds?
It looks like Crosswinds from here, right? Yeah.
Could be.
And the empty lot behind Crosswinds. So in any case...
just to put it under the permitted uses under a conditional use permit. It's not just a site plan. So it would be a site-specific review that the planning board would be able to do. There creates, as many of you may know, when you have a conditional use permit, it's a legal presumption established by this council that it's a compatible use of the neighborhood. However, it's essentially a rebuttable presumption, that's subject to a site-specific review. Mm. So it's more of a control than simply a permitted use with a site plan.
I'm sorry, can you give an example of how this plays out in real life? So,
well, in real life as a restaurant, as you would look at is what are the adjoining uses? Might there be some restrictions on the hours and make sure that controls for noise, parking? Not necessarily parking so much on a conditional use permit because you don't have parking requirements for Hudson.
Does this apply to establishments that somehow have lapsed, or is could
it
you
would
create,
be open to, it would be open
to anyone?
You could take my house and make a restaurant out of it.
Well, you're not in R4, but yeah.
Yeah, I asked about R4.
Yeah. We have to be in the R4.
Yeah.
Depending on the other districts, and you have to tell me where you are, I'd have to look at it. And
she's not.
Our code is wonderfully confusing to figure out the uses.
Okay, so you just said that encompasses a larger area of the city south of 3rd Street. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Property you cited was on Washington?
On 3rd.
No, on 3rd.
No,
on 3rd and
3rd.
And it actually.
Okay, so that's
Robinson.
And I'm sorry, the R4 actually extends pretty much up to 4th along State Street.
State and Robinson.
To 4th. Area south of 3rd Street.
Well, there's one of them.
What's the confusion here?
No,
if we were on here, I'd show you.
Yeah, I mean.
West of 3rd Street.
West.
Thank you.
Not
south
of 3rd Street.
I'm sorry, not south.
Oh, sorry.
We're not
I'm
sorry.
City.
This is
yes, of course.
This, yeah.
No, it's okay. Exactly.
West of 3rd Street.
Yeah.
West of 3rd Street.
West of
3rd
Street.
Yes.
Okay, so.
And then west of 4th, and then basically the block from 3rd to 4th along State Street and Long Alley. That's also in the R4.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you're really talking about any property west of Third.
Correct.
North, south, doesn't matter.
No.
West of Third.
But it would have to be
R4. R4,
that's
right.
That's what I
right, but also recognize that in the middle there, the Warren Street corridor, which is CC, restaurants
right.
already allowed all
exactly.
there.
Exactly. So this is, these are primarily residential areas, currently residential
right.
areas.
The R4 primarily only allows residential uses with the exceptions for things like museums.
Yeah, antique stores. There's a bunch of weird.
It's very limited. It is generally a non-commercial district.
And which ward predominantly?
And,
it's part second, part fourth.
Yeah.
Okay,
but
so
this is part of, I mean, allowing this is allowing business, a certain kind of business, to extend beyond where we are on Warren Street. So, I mean, if you want to, I mean, it's going to take a while to do this law, by the way. It has to go before a number of things. But, you know, personally, I see it as part of trying to extend and get rid of this kind of strict residential zoning that we have and to extend things beyond Warren Street. Not everything, obviously, but certain kinds of businesses.
So I have no
acres. Take me through
this. I'm sorry, what? One at a time. What did you ask, Dominic?
So, like, No Acres can be converted to a restaurant?
Is No Acres in R4?
Yeah.
Well, the wards don't line up with the zone.
Yeah, it's not about wards. It's about zoning districts.
So that's the zoning district in R4.
Thanks. Let's see. Yeah, right. Green Street. No, that is R2.
R2?
Yeah.
But
it's over here. It's in this near.
You're looking at 66 there, Tom?
Factory.
What's that? Yeah.
That's R2?
Yep. Yes, Eileen.
I just want to make sure I'm understanding this right. By what we're doing here, are we addressing and making it okay in R4 zoned areas only?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You're opening up all of the R4, which is one of your bigger districts.
Okay. But it's only in R4.
But it's all, you're not affecting any of the other districts. You're not
correct.
Changing any of the zoning anywhere
right.
else.
Okay.
Can we stop this over here, please? It's kind of confusing.
Okay. Thanks.
Any more discussion?
I would just like to understand the conditional use part again.
The planning board can issue essentially two types of approvals, a site plan approval and a conditional use permit. The review under a site plan is much more constrained. You have a general right to do it in the district. You look at simple site layout issues in terms of landscaping, driveway access, basic design elements of the property, not getting into things that the historic gets into. A conditional use permit has a heightened level of review by the planning board where you look at the traditional things are noise, odors, lights, vibration, the impacts coming from the project, where they can put in and say, well, it's not appropriate here, even though you're in the district, given either what you're proposing, because it's all a factor of what's the actual proposal, what's the limitations on your lot, what are the surrounding land uses, and is it really compatible to put that in there? So they would have a little more discretion on deciding what to do about that.
So it would make anything a conditional use, the second one you've just described?
Mm-hmm.
It makes restaurants, we're putting them in, is what you have is you have, if you go look in the zoning code, and it does get confusing the way we have it. You have permitted uses in a category of those, and those generally require site plan approval. And then you have conditional use permits. Those are the uses that require a conditional use permit. We're proposing to put this under the conditional use permit criteria.
Okay.
So it's not as a simple approval review. The other thing is when you're doing a site plan review by the planning board, a public hearing is optional. If the planning board wants to have one, a conditional use permit, it's mandatory.
Okay.
We put, if you remember when we did the chicken law,
which you're all proud of, I know.
Yeah.
That's a conditional use permit. Because even though it's a relatively simple thing, and you'd say, okay, we could put it as a site plan, we made it as a conditional use permit, so neighbors would have an opportunity to object.
And then a hearing.
And this would be the same thing.
Same thing.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, I would certainly recommend for something like this is that you would, you know, use a conditional use permit for this. Mm-hmm. It provides added protection.
But it seems like it's in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why I put it in.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, there's no previous use. It's not like you can take something that...
Yeah, you can.
Sure you could.
If you have, regardless of your current use, your property...
Regardless of your current...
And you, regardless, I mean, you own any building in that district, and you've sold it or whatever, it doesn't matter. The owner says, I want to open up a bar.
Right.
They could apply for a bar, for a license to operate a bar.
Okay.
In there.
And I'm sure, as Dominic could probably tell you, there were bars in that district.
I imagine that.
And I believe, I mean, I don't want to speak for Tiffany, I know she's been pushing this, you know, and I think Tom's articulated this to me. It's a feeling is that it would be, you know, it's not a bad idea to allow restaurants to expand beyond Warren Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To other areas.
Rebecca?
Does it have to be both eating and drinking?
Well, it doesn't have to be, but those are the terms you generally use in the code now. You don't ever make a distinction between the two.
Mm.
You could create a different use, you know, a different sort of use category if you wanted to. We just have to define it. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it in terms of things because most successful restaurants have a liquor license.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And most bars serve some kind of food.
Right.
So,
I mean, in general,
they have to, yeah.
I'm positive on this because I do think it's important to allow smaller businesses in neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to allow neighborhoods to have their own small businesses that can flourish. So
do I have an introduction? Go on. A second. Sure. Thank you, gentlemen.
Just so you know, the process on this is after you're actually not going to vote on this again for a while. Mm-hmm. What we have to prepare now, assuming there's, you know, and this is Tom and I want to do this, see that there's general support for it on the board. Obviously, you're not committing to anything. Is I've got to prepare, probably with Rob's help, an environmental assessment form for the potential impacts of this going through. We have to send this
to the planning board.
To the planning board. They have 30 days to review it. We'll have to send it to the county planning agency. They'll have 30 days to review it. After the 30 days are up, whether you have the report from the planning board or not, you have to hold a public hearing here, as opposed to the, because you have separate rules as a zoning amendment as opposed to a general local law. So you will have to hold a public hearing here. You'll make a determination of significance under SEAKER. Then you'll take a final action on the law, and then it goes to the mayor.
Okay.
And I think he actually holds another public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to add to what I said previously, which is that, I mean,
mm-hmm.
Can I just share my opinion? I think it's a degradation of a residential potential. So, thank you.
Okay. We're going to switch these around because one is more difficult than the other. So we're going to go to the fourth proposed local law of tonight. Amends Chapter 249 of the Code of the City of Hudson concerning smoking in city parks and facilities. This was actually brought to us by Karen DePeister of, I can't remember the name of the group. Something about smoking and...
Anti-tobacco.
Yeah. Anybody know the name of the anti-tobacco group?
Tobacco-free Alliance.
Yes,
Tobacco-free Alliance. There you go. Thank you. And this is to just change the, what they're offering us are new signage. But in order to do that new signage, they would like to incorporate some new rules. which means incorporating a prohibition against vaping in the parks, and also against, well, since we will soon have legal marijuana, also against smoking pot in the parks. Is that pretty much a...
Well, that tracks state law. The law that legalized marijuana allows you to smoke it anywhere except it's otherwise prohibited.
So this is just...
If you're not allowing regular cigarette smoking anywhere, you're also not allowing marijuana.
So this changes it so that when they make the signs, they can include those... Because they've offered to completely donate the signage wherever you've seen it. You see, I know you've seen them on the park benches, so we're going to have a whole new signage, and the Friends of Hudson Youth have designed a new logo for it, and this just makes it all possible. Any questions? Ryan.
So the language that is suggesting to strike also has a clause about enforcement, which this man lacks.
Because I didn't think it was necessary. It was the previous law that we were taking out regulated smoking in municipal buildings.
Okay.
It predated the state law, which prohibited all smoking indoors, whether municipal buildings or private employers. So I think that enforcement language that we had in there was really designed and looked like for means of enforcing within the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was unnecessary at this point because it will generally be subject to the police. Would be able to enforce it because it's activities in the park.
Mm.
So they would issue citations for the same way as saying, you know, you're violating the city code of smoking in the park.
Like open thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So the penalty is?
That's what's on the books now.
It's already there.
I didn't change any of that.
That's already the penalty.
That is the current
penalty. That's the current penalty.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't change
that. Does anybody?
In jail?
Probably never.
Yeah.
Well, it can be. I mean, the penalties, I mean, you have similar provisions in most of the city code stuff for like violations of building codes and other provisions.
Mm-hmm.
It is exceedingly rare that any, you know, across all jurisdictions that people are jailed for something like this unless you're repeated bad actor, really.
So, can I have an introduction? One. A second, please. Sure shot. Okay, and now this last law is long, among other things, and it's modeled on a law that was recently signed into law in Albany. And it has been, this version has been adapted to Hudson by Jeff. And could you explain it a little bit, Jeff?
I can try.
Oh, by the way, it came to us from Tiffany and Rebecca.
It's basically a law to protect tenants from being priced out of or being refused to be re-rented their property. It creates, again, a rebuttable presumption that if you're a good tenant, in other words, you're paying your rent on time, you're not violating any laws, you're not creating a nuisance, the property will continue to be re-rented to you, and it cannot be, the rent cannot be increased by greater than 5% every year. If you try to increase the rent beyond 5%, say 6%, 7%, that is considered an unfair means of trying to force somebody out. And so it generally requires somebody to continue to rent their property to a good tenant. And then it has other provisions out in there that allows the landlord, if they are selling the building and the contract for sale requires them to deliver it without tenants, they can do that. But if the contract of sale to new buyer or the property, new landlord is going to continue as a rental property, they continue to have the same obligations of renting it out to the existing tenants, subject to the 5% rule. And then there's provisions also as if a landlord wants to take one of the units for themselves or a family member, they can do that. They can evict somebody for that again. those are the primary elements of it.
Any questions from the council?
Where was this? You said it was enacted in Albany. Is that the new one?
It was signed into law on Friday. Correct.
The one thing I just wonder if you want to include for more tenant protection is in the sale of the building, do we want to stipulate a minimum of 60 days notice of sale from the selling party to the existing tenants that they have to notify them in writing?
Well, given the more recent, I'd have to go back and look at it, Brian. It's not a bad idea. You have the rent protection laws that were passed 2 years ago that provide much of that anyway, depending on your how long you've been a tenant there.
To 90 days.
It's 90 days there.
Well, it changes depending on the...
Yeah, up to 90 days.
Up to 90.
Yeah, depending on how long you've been there.
But that's why I was just suggesting, do we want to make it...
Well, they're still going to be subject to all of that. This is the difference in terms of where the notice of the sale, and then the new owner would then still have to be, even if you're just on a month-to-month tenancy, depending on how long you've been there, the new owner would be subject to, many of those instances of 60 days.
So I'd like to ask a question, Rebecca, and
I'll
ask Tiffany when I see her. Is this a big problem in Hudson?
Yes, it is. Yeah, and it's one of the big triggers of displacement that we identified in just researching what it's cost.
How would you characterize it? So it, I understand what the words say here, but the first page, that's about it.
Can I answer that? Because I talked to it. What happens is when an outside investor or owner, landlord, hears that certain rent levels have gone up, they will evict somebody so that they can then increase their rental fee.
It's called the market.
Yeah. So it's just, even if there's no changes going to happen in that building, they want the ability to increase it because they see other landlords have increased their rental. Volatile market, yeah.
For tenants. It's not favorable situation for people who are just trying to.
What I run into is also that intimidation is that if the tenant complains too much, and it's like you keep complaining, I'm not going to be meeting you as well. So that's one of the big things I run into, is that people are afraid to complain about issues because they're afraid of being.
Well, just regard to that, Dominic, they already have protection under the law for that. This doesn't really add anything more to that. It's still a function of you need, representation or assistance to deal with those issues.
Oh yeah, and no doubt. But it's still, again, in terms of tenants, they get intimidated and naive because what's out there in the market now is so competitive that they'll rather, have something not working or something not addressed than lose their apartment.
Right. And that's a fair housing issue. What you're
absolutely. Yeah. That's what I do. Absolutely. Yeah. Doesn't mean it's always successful.
Okay. Can I have an introduction? Ryan. A second. Rebecca. Okay. That's all on the agenda. Jane, did you have something you'd like to add?
I have a question.
Yes.
I was called this evening to say that there would be another resolution that I did not see, and I'm wondering, and it's a small one, but it has to do with the bike permitting.
Yeah, it's on the bike.
Bike permitting.
For next time.
No, that's next, we've already introduced it. That's coming up for a vote next week.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's okay. It's okay. Anybody else? Wait, did somebody just leave?
That was just
Michelle.
Oh, okay.
Just ran out.
So, anybody? Oh, Dominic, sorry. I didn't see you.
Yeah. So, I was going to ask today for a committee for, and I'm sorry I didn't get back to you, Jeff, but, you know, to look into speed reduction, starting the process.
Oh, okay.
Using Glenwood as a template, so can we shift this as a topic for the legal committee?
Yes, absolutely.
To deal with it?
Yep.
Sounds like you have a volunteer.
Absolutely. I'll send out an email soliciting volunteers as well as, and I think, for example, there may be some, one or two of the existing ad hocs will go into this reinstituted legal committee.
What other ones do you have?
Sidewalks.
Sidewalks.
Yeah.
Because it is a law, and maybe inclusionary, because that'll be a law too.
Okay.
So.
You got the thing I sent you for on Friday on parking for next week.
I'm sorry, I'm not. Oh yeah, you want your presentation for next week? Yes. Okay. Anybody in the public have anything they'd like to? Yes.
I just have one question. The law that you are now considering, the changing or
which one?
Changing the code to allow eating and drinking establishments in R4 districts. That presumably is to address Basil Nook's situation. So I'm wondering why this is the course that was taken instead of what was suggested a few years ago, which was to allow buildings that had been constructed as commercial buildings and had a historic use as commercial buildings, but you know, it had lapsed over time,
to be used again for commercial purposes. I'm just curious to know why this, you know, eating and drinking establishments was opted for instead of doing something like that. Don't ask me. I wasn't aware that that was being considered. I would think,
yes,
though.
Local law number 9 of 2018 or 17 or something.
I'll look at that. I certainly, off the top of my head, I could see a number of issues with that in terms of how it's defined.
That would have addressed Basil Nook's situation as well as the situation that existed then with Urbar, which, you know, was officially operating as an art gallery that served wine and coffee, when in fact it was a bar and there was a little bit of art on the wall. That's how they managed to get their conditional use permit.
I mean, I do think that this version addresses a different...
Exactly.
A different angle on it.
Okay.
So it is unlikely, in my view, that other than a very deep-pocketed investor or group would take that on. It would not be the mom-and-pop thing, and it sadly would not address the small, I just want to have a little storefront, you know, thing. Because it is expensive to create a restaurant, to have a commercial kitchen, to get the permitting, to do the tables, to hire the staff, all that kind of stuff takes considerable investment.
Depends how mom and pop it is.
Right.
But I think, it might be an interesting thing to try to have, like, a public meeting about to determine.
Well, this will.
Yeah.
This process will have all that.
Yeah.
I just feel it will fail to address the legitimate questions you raise about it helping to the small entrepreneurial eatery flourish because it is such a capital.
Well, not really. I mean, think of all the corner stores that exist already in the R4. They could easily convert to.
That goes also, to the point that was just raised about taking something that is a currently commercial establishment and giving it a greater leeway.
I think that there are a number of people who do have very small businesses
but we're not talking about small business, we're talking about eating and drinking and stuff.
That's the kind of business I'm talking about. That's a business. it's a
not now.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else? So now you have to sign your... oh, do I have a motion to adjourn, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. I did want to bring up something else. Okay. I really apologize.
Okay.
I haven't until right now. I'm wondering if we could ask Craig Hay to come in either possibly for a special meeting or for some kind of ad hoc committee that's devoted to figuring out what's going on with the vacancy.
Have you written to him?
I've spoken with him.
Has he responded?
When he came in most recently and reported, I believe what he said is basically he hasn't been enforcing it because he doesn't have the staff, something like that. And so to me, that's a pretty significant problem, and I feel as though council should address
it. When we did that, Lloyd, didn't we make it that the recommendation of built an abandoned a building that would fit the law would probably
yes.
come from the people in the neighborhood, and then I would see code enforcement. But I think probably the toughest enforcement we have is the fee that's put on the tax bill every year.
And it's also a loophole, because if you do a building permit and don't do nothing with it,
right.
it's cheaper to do a building permit than to pay vacancy.
Well, no, I don't think that's the issue. The issue is I think you expect more from the law than it actually provides. You know what I mean? Okay.
So.
No, I'll ask Craig to report on it.
Well, wasn't that part of the law that we were supposed to get to report on a quarterly basis?
It is. Yeah. It is, actually. And that's what I will cite to Craig. He likes to say he's not required, but he is, actually. Okay. Now do I have a motion to adjourn? Dewan? Second by Shersha. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Do not leave if you have to sign something. You have a lot to sign. I hope you have your own pen. Okay, these guys.
Let Shersha do it. You got to go to the store.
Okay. Shersha.
Yes, sir.
Shersha. Number 1, 2, 3, 4.
Shersha, 4?
No. Resolution.
How much you need to pay me for my things?
Live stream. You're number 2 on that. Can you reach? Oh, you need your glasses.
Old man.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Oh, okay. Give it a little.
Oh, boy.
Which one? Number 2.
We need to talk. Yes, we do.
Oh, okay.
Second?
No, number 2, huh? Second.
Well, I see you're going to make them tough. You're on that, too. What? Oh.